think that this year we need WORT more than ever. So 608-256-2001 or WORTFM.org. Show your love for Her Turn and for Her Infinite Variety. Thanks to Ricky and Patrick, who have been our superb phone answerers.
You are listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and TNW Ensemble Theater, presenting Scammed, a new comedy running March 13th through March 23rd at TNW Ensemble Theater, 1957 Winnebago Street. When a freelancing editor falls for a classic scam, she assumes the amoral alter ego of Helen Wheels to get even. Tickets are available at the door with cash or check or online through Ticket Tailor. More information is available by calling 608-770-0826.
Good morning and welcome to Her Turn, a program of news and information by and about women. The bulk of today's program is a special feature. We're all born male and female. No, scientifically speaking, it's not as simple as that. On today's show, Her Turn Florida correspondent will take a look at what science says. But first, we're in the middle of the WRT Winter Pledge Drive. So here are Christina, Joanne, myself, and Garma here with more information about how you can contribute to your community radio station.
And we are in the middle of a pledge drive. 608-256-2001 is the number to call and pledge your support for feminist news here on WORT. It is your community radio station. And that means that you are the community. You support us. We support you. You can pledge both by calling. We have people out there who we have Anne and Margaret out there waiting to take your calls. And then if you don't want to talk to Anne and Margaret, you can also, of course, go to WRTFM.org and pledge your support that way. We're hoping to hear from at least six of you during the course of this program. And as we mentioned, the bulk of our show is a big, long feature, so we only have a moment. Christina.
Hello. Hello.
Tell us why people should be pledging.
So, especially in this day and age with the current administration, local community-sponsored news is going to be extremely important now because, as we know, our mainstream media is kind of bought out and censored. So it is going to be extremely important to support your local community-sponsored radio.
Yep, and our hosts, engineers, and reporters are all volunteers. Nobody yes. besides the FCC and some legal restrictions on nonprofits tell our host what to say on air. So please, please, please pledge at 608-256-2001 or donate online at wordfm.org.
That's
hit
right.
That big heart button.
The big heart button. That's right. The donate button. It's very easy to do. We'll take pledges of any amount, small pledges, large pledges. We just need to hear from several of you over the course of this program. It's only a short pledge drive this time around, maybe a week and a half. And the number, again, 608-256-2001. Call and support news that you're not going to hear elsewhere on your radio station. I know that the Trump administration is actively trying to censor and put pressure on all kinds of different
check.
All kinds of different news and media sources. So we need your support to keep this station up and active and alive. 608-256-2001.
And also, don't you want to listen to me, Madison Delia, where you can't find me anywhere else. This is a special edition.
And Christina, and you want to wrap this up before we go to our feature?
Absolutely. So again, just feminist news is very important, especially with all of the attacks that are happening. with this current administration. So again, you can donate at WORTFM.org and hit that donate button.
All right. 608-256-2001.
In one of his first actions last week as the new head of Department of Health and Human Services, RFK Jr. has updated the official definitions of the terms male and female. He says that is only to be in compliance of Trump's executive order. The executive order issued soon after Trump's inauguration was clear, or was it? According to Trump, the U.S. government will now only recognize two sexes, male and female. When Professor of Biology and Neuroscience Rachel DeVille heard this, she was quoted in the Stat News as saying, "It's a definition that's not testable, and it's not policeable, so it's kind of bull. And you can fill in the rest of the blanks since the FCC doesn't allow us to finish that word on air." When Her Turn reporter Arlene Zauche read that story, she decided that she had to talk to the professor and find out more.
During his inauguration, Trump said that there are, and I'm quoting here, two genders, male and female. What's your reaction to that?
Well, it's actually incorrect to give you a restrained answer. The executive order somewhat conflates sex and gender and gets them a bit confused, but there are not two sexes, nor are there two genders. And that is certainly true in other organisms. It's also true in humans.
So maybe we should back up just a little bit and start with a little bit of a science lesson. Can you explain what you just said about there aren't just two sexes? Why isn't sex so simple and straightforward as just male and female?
Well, what we recognize as sex is the result of a sequence of events. And just like any sequence, at any one of those steps, things can go in any number of ways. So the way that mammals typically end up with male and female is primarily the result of a single gene on the Y chromosome, and that is called SRY. And at about 8 weeks of age post-conception in humans, that gene turns on and directs a gonad, which is the internal organs that we recognize as typically male and female, that is testes and ovaries. And it says to what is at 8 weeks, a neutral gonad, SRY says, become a testis. And in so doing, when a testis develops, it immediately starts releasing hormones, notably testosterone. Now, if that SRY gene on the Y chromosome doesn't work, or isn't present, what happens is that the neutral gonad develops as an ovary. So that is step one. And as I've already tried to say by my wording, any number of things can go differently right there. Notably, you can have a Y chromosome without an SRY gene, or you can have an SRY gene that through a previous event in development landed on the X chromosome. So you have an X individual with a gene that makes a testis. So does that part make sense?
Yeah, people don't always think about things that can happen. They think about, quote unquote, the usual, and they don't think about other examples of what can happen.
Yes, and to make it more complex, everything downstream time-wise of that gonad becoming a testis and cranking out hormones, or becoming an ovary. Ovaries do not crank out hormones until puberty. Every difference that we recognize or try to label as male or female is primarily the result of the presence or absence of hormones, which generally correlates with the presence of a testis, which secretes hormones, or the presence of an ovary, which does not. So, for example, our genitalia, which is what most people use functionally to delineate two sexes, is the result, again, of the presence or absence of hormones. No matter what your chromosomal complement or what your SRY gene is or isn't, you have the ability to develop a penis and all of its associated typical parts, or a clitoris and labia and all of its associated parts. And that is primarily determined by whether or not hormones are present to act on the developing genitals. But each of those steps then, having a gene on the Y chromosome that works, successfully having that gene turn a neutral gonad into a testis, having the testis do what it typically does, which is crank out hormones, and having those hormones be effective on other body parts like genitals to create a penis in that case. However, what if, here's a variable for you, what if everything goes in the typical fashion to create what we would bestow male status on at birth? So we have a testis developing, it's generating testosterone, but what if your body can't recognize testosterone? None of the cells in the genitalia or protogenitalia can see the testosterone that's there. Its receptors don't recognize testosterone. Well, then you've got an individual who's got lots of testosterone and a testis, but their genitalia develop along a pathway that we would identify as female. And often such individuals don't know what has happened until they hit puberty and they don't menstruate. And an ultrasound reveals that, in fact, they have testes, not ovaries. My point here is that there's a sequence of a gene on Y turns on. It affects the development of which gonad you get, which in turn affects the development of what genitalia you get by virtue of whether it secretes or doesn't secrete hormones. And it continues to march along that way. So at what point do we define sex? At any one point, a decision can be made in one of several ways. So most of us develop in a way that aligns such that one has an SRY gene on a Y chromosome. It makes a testis, which secretes hormones, and we have what we call male genitals and masculinized other body parts and potentially the brain. And alternately, we could develop as female. But a lot of us don't. There are a lot of what we call intersex conditions, some of which are quite common. There may be intersex conditions that we have yet to identify because they don't have body markers that would show us what they are. And then there's the whole conundrum of the impact of hormones on the developing brain, which is where we start to get into the issue of gender identity. My point being, sex is not binary, and it's very difficult to figure out how to define it, defining it on the basis of which sex has the bigger gamete or something like that is sort of useless and inaccurate. And what we really seem to be policing in real life is genitalia. And as I've said, if any step goes differently, genitalia are not necessarily consistent with the other steps in development.
Not everybody has the same amount of hormone levels, do they? I mean, is there a continuum when it comes to that as well?
Absolutely. And in fact, it's not simply hormone levels. It's your ability to recognize those hormone levels. Hormones work by connecting to cells that use them. And that connector is called a receptor. And if a cell's receptors don't recognize a hormone, it's functionally not there. So it's not only how much of any one hormone do you have, but do you have the receptors to recognize and use that hormone? The International Committee for the Olympics assigned a bunch of top-notch scientists to determine who got to compete as female in particular. And they were at a loss and finally ended up with hormone levels, acknowledging that it wasn't the best. So if an international team of people can't define sex, it's rather odd that someone has used an arbitrary step in the process, most notably the first one, which has a lot of different ways it could subsequently go, to define male and female.
Is it all about biology? How does socialization come into play?
Well, now you're getting into sort of asking if the brain is gendered biologically or not. And there is evidence that there are sex differences in the brain, and that's a shorthand for saying the brain tends to develop one way for those who follow a typically male-assigned pathway and another for those who go through a female pathway. But again, these are not absolutes. These are ranges of differences. For example, there's differences, we think, in the connectivity between the right and left sides of the brain, between cisgender males and cisgender females. There may be differences in symmetry, the size difference between the left and right side of the brain in cis males versus cis females. None of which is to say one is better or worse. There's also evidence that cis males and cis females use their brains differently. So nothing is sort of deterministic. And on top of all that, we're not really even talking yet about identity or cognition, which are messy and may have default settings, but those default settings could be totally overridden by environment, training, teaching, toys, etc.
And I'm trying to understand if this focus on this male-female binary, is this unique to us here in the U.S.? Is it a cultural issue? Is it a worldwide issue? It seems that we're all tied up in knots about this.
Well, I'm not a politician or an anthropologist. I can say that historically, there are many, many cultures that have recognized more than two sexes and more than two genders. And I would like to think of gender identity as sort of just another step in all of these processes. There are lots of politicians who opine about why our country is getting all tied up in knots about this. It seems to have two contexts in which it's getting tied up, and that doesn't really answer the why. One is in athletic competitions, and the other is in safety. And I will say the whole context in which this order is framed is for women's dignity, cis women's dignity, safety. But there's actually no evidence that, in particular, trans women are attacking cis women in the bathroom. I would suggest, based on my own experience, that it's cis men who are attacking cis women in bathrooms, but there is no evidence that cis women are placed at risk in showers or bathrooms by trans women. They may be uncomfortable, but I think discomfort is not the same thing as safety. And discomfort we need to get used to. When we integrated our bathrooms and schools, it was probably not comfortable, but that doesn't mean it was the wrong thing to do.
And you mentioned athletics. I think that can be a sticking point for a lot of people, too. They think that women don't have an equal chance. Do you have any feeling about that?
This is at the edge of my expertise, but I would say that the current standards for trans, we're not worried about trans men. The general public seems to assume that trans men would perform inferiorly to cis men. The real worry promoted in the general public is that somebody will cross-dress and pretend to identify as female so that they can win an Olympic event, which I find extraordinarily imaginative and unlikely. It has happened once or twice in history. That said, a trans woman who is competing will be on hormone blockers, which will block any effects of testosterone that she has in her body, and that is currently required. And her testosterone levels, according to current definitions, also must be within a certain range. But cis women have a range of testosterone levels as well. So again, it's very sticky. And somebody who is on blockers, who has now experienced reduced muscle mass, et cetera, arguably has no advantage over a cis woman. I would be more concerned, for example, about someone like Michael Phelps, who has long limbs and some webbing between his fingers, or so it's said. Why is that not a genetic advantage, and why is that not ruled against? Picking on gender identity and assigning arbitrary bodies, it gets really messy.
You've studied these issues for a long time now. What first got you interested in these issues?
Well, I had a background in animal behavior, which means both how ecology affects behavior over immediate and evolutionary time, but also how do hormones and the nervous system affect behavior and performance? To be honest, I had not been working with people. I had been working in what my data let me into sex differences in song and reproductive behavior in birds. But a student asked a question 25 years ago in a class after I'd lectured on the science-y background we just talked about and said, what about trans folks? And this was sort of prescient because 25 years ago, this was not in the public discourse. And so he and I stayed after class and we talked and I looked into the literature and I saw that, in my opinion, the science was really flawed based on assumptions that hadn't been proven and comparisons that were being made were not the right comparisons. And eventually I had an aha moment saying, this isn't rocket science. You could get into this and do it well. So I studied, educated myself. I had the strong background in neuroendocrinology and behavior and started doing my own research. So that's how I got there. It is one student's fault for asking me a question. And every once in a while, I send him a little note saying, thanks a lot.
Do you have an opinion about what it is about trans and non-binary issues that seem to get people so scared or angry?
I really don't know. I think that's a question for a sociologist. What's odd is if you ask a cis person, how do you know you're female? How do you know you're male? They will say, I've always known, et cetera, et cetera. And yet someone who answers that question differently and says, well, I've always been non-binary, or I haven't been sure, or I'm actually trans, somehow is disbelieved because they're giving an uncommon answer. Maybe we're afraid of strangeness. I would say it's the same fear people who are gay experience from people who are straight. It's fear of difference. And I think that fear has been preyed upon and magnified several orders of magnitude by those who wish to fractionate us. But that's a personal opinion as a citizen, not as a scientist per se.
So circling back now to Trump's executive order about male and female, from your scientific point of view, what do you see as the implications of that?
From a scientific point of view, it's terrifying. Because it's an oversimplified and inaccurate representation of science. Good scientists test hypotheses. They don't promote hypotheses. The idea of testing a hypothesis, for example, would be saying, if there are only two sexes, then I should see this, this, and this, and being willing to be wrong. And what's terrifying is that the language is murky in this order, and he is denying the diversity and variability that scientists see in human development, as well as development in other organisms. That denial can have many downstream ramifications that I find very scary.
Like what?
Well, once you start denying scientific research, it gets messy. In this case, it erases individual people and says you don't exist. It erases those of us who identify as non-binary, those of us who identify as trans, and says you are not legitimate. You don't have a right to exist in who you know yourself to be, even though I know myself to be male in the case of Trump. I have the right to say that and you don't. And it's based on a fiction. And that I find scary. Erasing people, denying them their rights, denying them access to health care is terrifying.
Is there anything else you wanted to make a point to say that I didn't get to?
Yeah, actually there is. Well, as I will tout science and good science as being hypothesis testing and seeing what the data show us and then working further to understand something, I think we all have a tendency to think there will be a simple answer to something like schizophrenia, to something like your personality, or to something as distinct as your identity. And I just want to remind people that no matter what the government says, or no matter if there is a gender identity gene found or not, It is much more complicated than a simple gene or a simple hormone. And you are the expert in who you are. You know your sexuality, you know your identity, or you know where there are points where you're not clear yet, but you are the expert. Don't give that power to anybody else.
That was Professor of Biology and Neuroscience Rachel Levin. She recently spoke with Her Turn reporter Arlene Zaucha. And now, back to pledging.
And we are back. Christina, we have people
yes.
to thank. We have people to thank, Christina.
Oh, absolutely. Fantastic. Who are we thanking?
Well, we'd like to thank Lizzie, who gave us a generous pledge. Thank you, Lizzie, for
your generous
pledge to the program. And we'd also like to thank Anne, who gave a generous pledge to our program as well.
I wish I had a bell.
Neither of them are.
Wait.
Yes, thank you.
Neither of them are picking up a thank you gift. We will be happy to tell you about those thank you gifts in a moment. But Anne likes the Sunday Women's Programming, likes Labor Radio, and likes Global Revolutions. So thank you, Anne, and thank you, Lizzie, for your generous pledges. Still needing a few more people in the last 4 minutes. We had that lengthy feature about sex and gender that we just heard from our Florida correspondent, Arlene Zaucha. So thank you very much for that. Why should people be calling in the next 4 minutes here, Christina?
Well, community-sponsored radio is very important because, again, like we said at the beginning of the show, our media, our mass media, is actually being censored right now. So when you tune into community-sponsored radio, we are not beholden to shareholders. We actually bring you uncensored and sometimes really raw and emotional stories. And it's very important now more than ever to get into community building.
All right. And you can join Lizzie and Anne, who have given generous pledges on the program today, by going to WRT at WRTFM.org and pledging that way. Or you can go to 608-256-2001 and pledging. We have... Anne and Margaret out there waiting for
you. You can talk to Anne right now, who just pledged. She's right out there. She's waiting for to talk to you.
That's right. 608-256-2001. This also, of course, is one of the only places you'll find news focused on women and for news from a feminist perspective here on your radio dial anywhere on any of your radio stations, including this one. So if you support that, give us a call, 608-256-2001.
And we have some wonderful thank you gifts. We have a I Miss Nixon bumper sticker.
I've been pointing out to people for years and years now that the most left-wing president we've had since Nixon is Nixon. So the I Miss Nixon bumper sticker is definitely an entertaining, prize you can get if you pledge to WRT during this pledge drive.
Yeah, we have a word badge, which is a bumper sticker. It's quite funky. It has a... funky font and a black background. I think it can go very cool. It will look very cool with your hats, your shirts, your jackets, bags, and backpacks.
I'm parked behind a car with that bumper sticker on it right now.
Awesome. We also have a Progressive Magazine one-year subscription, so you can go for that. And we have crossbody bags. We have winter hats, and we have umbrellas this time, and long-sleeves T-shirts, camel backpacks, headphones, and quite a bit, a lot more.
And also, if you can't donate one large lump sum, we do have our evergreen donations where, you can donate $5 a month, $10 a month, even $15, $20 a month, whichever is easier for you to donate. So please go to WORTFM.org and donate, or 608-256-2001.
There's only a minute remaining in this program. I do want to point out we are volunteer produced this program. If you want to volunteer, that's also an option. Give us a call at the station. We'd be happy to show you around. And, you know, if you're interested in feminist news, that would be great. Of course, this is a production of the Her Turn Collective. Garima Gupta is our engineer. Hi, Garima.
Hello.
And Madison Delier was the anchor of today's program. I'm Joanne Powers. On the phone, Christina Kivlin. Hi, Christina.
Hello, hello, Christina Kivlin. I have been volunteering since 2022.
I've been volunteering since 1997.
Wow.
1997.
I know. You've heard of the 90s.
Jesus.
Yeah, for me, it is just 1.5 years, but it is the most fulfilling thing I've ever done.
That's right. And we need to get to, of course, Her Infinite Variety coming up next. But you still have a chance to call and pledge 608-256-2001 or go online. You can join Anne and Lizzie, who both pledged during this program. We'd love to hear from several more of you in the next few seconds. But we're going to go to Her Infinite Variety. Thank you very much for listening. Like a bird up in the sky.
Celebrating the bad days, 'cause they're long, long, long gone. No more fantasizing. What could have been another song? Though I'm running late, my train is right behind. Takes as long as it takes. It could take my whole life, and I'll still be right on time.